Yeah, yeah. Fantastic. All right, we're going to start with the oral arguments for the morning. We have four, and then we have one submitted case. The first case to be argued is Appeal Number 21-2173, Sanderling Management Limited versus Snap Incorporated. We'll first hear from the appellant counsel, Ms. Witzma? Weitzma?
Correct.
All right. Ms. Weitzma, you've reserved 5 minutes of time, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Please begin whenever.
Good morning. May it please the Court. I want to start today by describing our client's invention, and then I want to focus on three specific errors that the District Court made in finding that invention invalid as a matter of law. A decade ago, Sanderling found a technical way for mobile devices to be effectively used as a marketing tool by branding and sharing images taken on those devices. At the time, conventional technology analyzed a selected picture already taken on the device for data specific to that image, and then matched and returned a relevant image processing function to the device. This process was slow, inefficient, static, and could not be scaled. Sanderling found a technical solution to these problems by delinking the delivery of the editing processing functions to the mobile devices from the data analysis of those images already captured on the devices. Its invention did so by using the actual GPS location of devices rather than the location where those pictures were taken. As Sanderling emphasized during prosecution of the patent and after amending the claims to add this limitation, the invention required the, quote, actual use of GPS location data. By delinking the delivery of editing functions from image content and instead tying it to the device's actual location, Sanderling's invention was able to, what we call, preload the editing functions on devices even before any pictures were taken. And by delinking, it improved both the operability and the functionality of the mobile devices themselves.
I could ask you a question. What if the claimed invention was a method, a computerized method, of distributing restaurant coupons? And it was based on using GPS to track different people by their phones. And then when they saw that someone was nearby a restaurant, they would transmit to that person a coupon because there was an Applebee's right around the corner. And so now, you know, hey, $10 off at Applebee's right around the corner. Do you think that would be patent eligible?
Your Honor, I'm unable to answer that with a yes or no, and I'll explain why. As your opinion, your concurrent opinion noted in American Axle, the eligibility analysis is very difficult, and it is case-by-case driven, and it is a contextual context analysis. And as Bilski made clear, there is no one simple way to analyze what is eligible or not. There's no one specific test. And therefore, this court has used a decisional mechanism of applying the court's prior precedents and comparing whether a particular invention and the claims of those inventions are more comparable to cases in which an invention provided a specific solution to a specific technical problem in its specific technological environment, as in, for example, the Core Wireless, EnFish, CardioNet, Gemalto M2.
But would you say there's something technical about the invention I just described? Because there's some great efficiency at being able to, in real time, transmit these coupons to people that are located nearby the Applebee's restaurant?
And so
therefore it's a great marketing tool, and we're using computer technology, and there's something efficient and maybe even scalable, assuming we have the same understanding of what scalable means. So is that patent eligible?
Your Honor, I would submit that if it improved the functionality and operability of a user device to be able to find that Applebee's and use that coupon, then yes, it would be patent eligible under this court's precedence.
But at the same time, a claim like that looks like you're transmitting content, data, information, just based on a particular condition being satisfied. And I feel like we do have case law out there that has found claims like that ineligible.
Your Honor, the cases that find inventions involving the mere collection, transmission, analysis, or storage of data do find those type of claims ineligible. But here, where you have a specific way of achieving the invention that's necessarily rooted in a technological environment, this is an invention that is necessarily arises in the realm of computer networks. You are providing image processing functions. You're not just providing data. In fact, the entire point of this invention was to get away from any data analysis, data transmission. Those were the very reasons that the conventional way of doing it was inefficient and didn't provide the inventive steps of being able to simultaneously, almost instantaneously, reach large audiences, large groups of individuals with tailored content that was relevant at the particular time in a way that was both efficient and scalable. And so the court's decisions always turn on how the particular information is being used and the way it's being implemented. And
for what in your claims would be the specific improvement to computer technology? What would you say that would be?
Thank you, Your Honor. It improved the technology in two ways. It improved the device operability because it minimized the number of steps. Actually, it eliminated the number of steps to use the editing tools and made them available for immediate use by the end user. And the elimination of steps is something that the court is focused on in finding patents eligible. For example, in core wireless in particular, the court found that displaying information, the way that the information was displayed, limited the steps necessary to reach the desired functionality. So to here, this invention eliminated the steps needed for a user to actually use the editing functions, the desired functionality. It didn't, no longer did the user have to generate an image, capture it, designate it, send it to a remote server, have that remote server analyze the data, and then return a relevant processing function. This made it immediately available. And so that improved device operability. But there's a separate aspect to that, and it improved the functionality. Because that entire process of capturing, analyzing, sending, transmitting is a very inefficient process. And it's one that requires one-to-one analysis. You have to match a processing function to each and every single image under the conventional method. This allowed the device to operate without having to engage in that inefficient process of analyzing the specific information in the image itself. And that way it allowed it to target it to entire groups because no longer did it have to wait for each particular individual at a cultural event or sporting event to designate and send and analyze the image the way that the conventional technology did at the time. So it improved.
If you're making something available for immediate use, though, isn't that simply using a computer to do something faster?
It's a little bit different. I know that the claim uses the term automatically. But I would contend that the use of the word automatically in the context of this patent does not mean mere automation. Almost every invention that we see is going to use some form of computer functionality that the court is looking at in these abstract cases. What this claim means is that it is doing it automatically without any user intervention, without any user initiation. Like the conventional method where a user had to actually designate the photo and send it. No longer did that have to happen. It was automatically supplied to them. It was preloaded on their device, so it was immediately available for use.
Did you argue that the district court needed to construe certain claim terms before it could resolve the motion?
We argued that there were certain claim terms that needed to be construed, but we further emphasized that the claim construction process should be a robust one based on consideration intrinsic and extrinsic evidence, including and expert testimony.
Did you ever provide proposed constructions or explain to the district court how it would make a difference if, for instance, your proposed constructions were adopted?
Two separate questions. Let me answer the first one. We did not provide explicit definitions of individual discrete claim terms. What we did is we identified two terms that we believed might require construction, but in the motion to dismiss, there was no suggestion that SNAP was disputing the dynamic nature of the invention, the instantaneous nature of the invention, in fact, limitations that are explicitly required by the claims. And so it was not until the reply brief that they said, oh, these are all phantom limitations. The court can't look at this at step one or step two. And so at the hearing, we implored the district court, please engage in claim construction. You can't determine the character of an invention or the scope of the invention without going through this process.
And that's... And in that imploring or in your motion for reconsideration, did you tell the district court how the terms should be construed? And what difference it would make?
We told the court specifically why dynamically was something, was a function of the explicit claim terms and how that was provided an inventive benefit over the conventional methods of providing the image functions.
Which term are you construing for this dynamic feature?
The dynamic is a function of the fact there are explicit, the instantaneous is explicit. The...
Is that through the word automatically?
No, the instantaneously is a function of the fact that Claim 11 requires this to be used within a few seconds or less, which the patent defines as real time.
If you could just point me to some words in the claim.
Sure. The dynamically is first of all, it appears in the title, in the abstract, in the description of the invention, and we believe that it should have been considered at least as to the character of the invention
right,
at step one.
Right now we're just talking about claim construction, so I'm trying to figure out which word or phrase in one of the claims were you saying, right here, let's get this construed.
Did we say this is what you need to construe? We said that there were limitations such as automatic and instantaneous that needed to be considered.
Right. And so I see the word automatic. It's in automatically forwarding. Mm. I mean, I'm not sure how much work the word automatically is doing. Forwarding seems to say it anyway. But what you're saying instantaneously, you're saying dynamically, and I'm just trying to find out which word or words in any of your claims are those thoughts rooted?
Instantaneously is reflected in the language of Claim 11 in Column 24 of the 412 patent, which requires that the invention be made available in a few seconds or less. And the patent...
Help me. Which I'm looking at...
Appendix 75, Your Honor, Column 24...
Is it not in any of the Claim 1s that you have at the front of your blue brief?
We believe that it is not explicitly claimed in Claim 1, but because it is being delivered based on the location of the device rather than the process of sending and matching image data content.
I'm sorry, you said A75?
A75, Appendix 75, Your Honor.
Which claim?
Claim 11, column 24.
All right.
It requires that the processing function be delivered in a few seconds or less, which
is
defined.
Dependent claim 11.
Correct.
Okay.
Your Honor, I see I'm well into my rebuttal time.
We'll save the remainder of your rebuttal time and see how much more, if any, we'll give you.
Thank you, Your Honor. I appreciate it.
Okay. Mr. Fortune?
Yes, Your Honor.
Is that how we pronounce your name?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
Okay.
You did very well, actually. Sorry, the deputy instructed us to wait for opposing counsel to clear the podium before we approach.
That's fine.
May it please the court. Good morning, Your Honors. Steve Shorchin on behalf of SNAP, Inc. Judge Tin, if I may, I would like to take up your hypothetical that you began the argument with. The invention, as you have described it, hypothetically, is patent ineligible under step one. And that is exactly the problem that Sanderling has with the independent claims in this case. The first mistake in analysis from a claim construction point of view that is made by Sanderling respectfully was articulated in the very opening comments that the images are already captured on the devices. And from this misreading, with all due respect, of the claims, which have no discussion about when an image is taken, or frankly, even if an image is taken, Sanderling then piles on alleged improvements to speed, efficiency, and other items in the hope of clinging to some eligibility under Section 101. If we may, let's start with the exact claims, the independent claims. And you will note that the lower court treated the independent claims as representative of all the claims asserted, and that Sanderling only had generalized, non-specific objections to that treatment. In none of the independent claims of the three asserted patents, is there any discussion or limitation about when the image must be taken? There's no discussion about if the image must be present before the distribution rule is matched or forwarded. And in fact, there's no discussion in the claims whatsoever that an image must even be taken. The final limitation of each of the independent claims, two are identical, one is slightly different, say, wherein at least one image processing function is set to be used by an application. That's with respect to claim 1 of the 412 and claim 1 of the 886. The 986 patent is similar but uses slightly different language with the same import, wherein the at least one digital media content processing function is configured to be used by an application. As we emphasize in our responsive brief on behalf of the appellee, at no point do any of these claims recite when the image must be taken, whether it is delinked in some way from the distribution rule, such that these so-called enhancements to speed or efficiency may be seen for purposes of analyzing step one of Alice or step two of 101 eligibility.
Can I ask you, your friend on the other side took us to a dependent claim, I think claim 11 of the 412 patent. Could there be a material difference with some of the dependent claims? And would you argue that that's not an issue we can reach because it wasn't argued below, given the representative claim analysis?
Judge Stark, thank you for the question. I do believe it was waived as not argued below. As I believe it was Judge Chen asked the question, and Judge Stark, you followed up, pressing counsel specifically for the claims that were requested by the lower court to be construed, but more importantly, the precise constructions that were offered. The record is unambiguous on this point. The appellant, Sanderling, on four separate occasions, now five technically, have declined to offer any court a claim construction for a claim term that actually appears in an issued claim. They declined to do it in response to the motion to dismiss. They declined to do it at oral argument before Judge Wu. They declined to offer a construction of any term on the motion for reconsideration. For the fourth attempt, they declined to offer any construction to this court, Judge Stark, I believe, having waived those arguments below. And now today, at oral argument, with all due respect, counsel has not provided any constructions except to say that there is a belief that instantaneous or automatically should be construed. But Judge Stark, to your question, that's never been requested by any court, and therefore it is waived. More importantly, the district court, properly following this court's guidance, when it asked Sanderling at the argument below if it could point to constructions that would alter its analysis and have under Alice in 101, and hearing none, the court in its written opinion said, as I'm instructed by the Federal Circuit, there's no claim construction here for me to resolve, nor has Sanderling pointed to any construction that would alter my analysis. And as a result, he conducted the step one and step two analysis as the Federal Circuit has instructed in the absence of those constructions. So Judge Stark, specifically to your question, my final comment to it is dependent claim 11, as I think Judge Chen probably observed in the way the question was responded to, does not even include the term that counsel and Sanderling today seeks for construction. So where we are on the construction issue is, having briefed it entirely and argued it below, including on reconsideration, no claim term appearing in an issued claim has been requested by any court for a specific construction to impact the 101 eligibility analysis.
With respect to Alice Step 2, are there any factual disputes that would need to be resolved?
No, Judge Cunningham, there are not. And the reason is twofold. First, the court below correctly concluded that under Alice Step 1, and Your Honor, I will come to Alice Step 2, that under Alice Step 1, the abstract idea was providing information, in this case processing function, based on the meeting of a condition, for example, matching a GPS location with a geographical location. That was Judge Wu's understanding of the abstract concept. Now, Judge Cunningham, to your direct question. In order to conduct a step two Alice invalidity, I'm sorry, 101 analysis, pardon me, 101 analysis, the court looks to see whether any inventive concept beyond the abstract idea itself is present. The record below, and as indicated in the order, both the primary order on the motion to dismiss and the motion on reconsideration, noted that there was no dispute from Sanderling that the primary components that are all recited in the claim language are all being used in their conventional and generic way under step two. And so, for example, Judge Cunningham, we have in the limitations servers and processors. There's no dispute in the appendix site here. It's in our brief at page 46, but the appendix sites are 49 through 52, but more importantly, appendix 64, which is the specification at column one, that the purported technologies of servers and processors are being used in their routine and conventional manner. For location indication, GPS module, or mobile device, the specification itself states that those are known in the art. Your Honor may find that at Appendix 71, Column 15, beginning at line 35. The court noted correctly that implementing GPS technology with mobile devices has been known for decades, citing several decisions of this court. With respect to distributing or forwarding the processing function, that is based upon the location or sensor data matching a generic condition. And that type of a generic data-related function cannot save the claim from ineligibility because this court has said repeatedly, including in the Electric Power Group case, the OIP technology case, and the BiSafe decision, that simply transmitting a rule, for example, Judge Shannon, your hypothetical, does not save a claim under step two of 101 determination. Finally, Judge Cunningham, there's two more arguments that could affect your answer, I suppose. The limitations that we discussed earlier, the set to be configured or set to be used limitation, which is the final limitation. The specification itself notices and acknowledges, and Your Honor will find this at Appendix 64, lines, column 1, beginning at line 38, that client terminals with integrated cameras and image sensors had already been widely used, I'm quoting, and I'll quote again, inexpensive image sensors and image processing software was readily available to mobile device manufacturers. Finally, Your Honor, there is an inherent argument in the briefing of the appellant that there somehow is an ordered combination here, and that even if the individual components recited in the claims are being used in their commonly accepted generic component expected manner, that there is some ordered combination. Respectfully, we believe that argument is incorrect for several reasons. First, the district court found, we believe correctly, and in his opinion it's at appendix page 14, that the asserted claims recite an ordered combination that do not amount to more than a conventional use of the computers. He concluded that the inventive concept that Sanderling identified, the so-called ordered combination of steps, is in fact the abstract idea itself. And that cannot supply the inventive concept, as this court has long held. More importantly, the claims, when you read them, they do not recite any limitation of a claim element required to be performed in any specific order. None of the features that Sanderling claims require some ordering, delinking, the instantaneous, dynamically enabled. None of those limitations, none of the claim terms that they rely upon for that argument actually appear in the limitations. They're phantom limitations.
Mr. Shulkin, your friend on the other side says that this invention is a technical improvement or technical solution to a technical problem or improvement in computer functionality. Why doesn't that raise a fact question?
Your Honor, for the same reason it did not in the two-way media case. The two-way media case, I think, is instructive on this point, Your Honor. In that case, the appellant argued that the specification set out a scalable architecture, and that the court should deem the claims eligible under step two of Alice because they enhance or enable a scalable architecture. The problem this court found, and I'm going to quote from the court's opinion, nothing in the claims or their constructions required anything other than conventional computer and network operating components according to their ordinary functions. And then when the court reached its holding, it said this, Nor do we see any inventive concept in the ordered combination of these steps. The steps are organized in a completely conventional way. Data is processed, sent, and once sent, specific information about the transmission is recorded.
Okay, so that may all have been, I guess, was true there, but that doesn't mean that that's all true here.
Well, Your Honor, I believe it is true here because there's nothing in the specification that sets forth or describes the scalability or the efficiencies for the components that are recited in the claims that Sanderling points to. So setting aside the Federal Circuit's long history of decisions that scalability and efficiency by itself does not satisfy Alice Step 2, for example, in the custom media case, one then looks to see whether the components themselves are being improved upon in some way, or are they being used in merely their conventional manner. And with respect, Judge Stark, the reason I answered Judge Cunningham's question that way and went through each of the components in the claim, starting with server and entering with the ordered combination, is that none of the components or structures recited in those limitations provide any inventive concept. And so we're left with, at the root of their argument, scalability and efficiency, which this Court has said is insufficient. Again, in many cases, custom media simply being a leading example.
There's this one passage in the patent specification I'm just curious about. A69.
Judge, I apologize. I'm a little hard of hearing, which Judge Lurie discovered on Tuesday.
A69?
Appendix 69. Thank you, sir.
If you go to A69, column 11, starting at line 51. Are you there?
I am, sir.
So it says, or for instance, System 100 is integrated with an image filtering service offered by Instagram, such that the Instagram service allows an end user to select a branding function offered by System 100. The end user selects the branding function in the same manner that the end user selects a filter provided by the Instagram image filtering service. And I'm just trying to understand here. Is this passage saying the Instagram image filtering service is already something in the prior art and that this invention is supplementing that?
Your Honor, I believe it may be, and I'll tell Your Honor why by referring to another specification section. If Your Honor would refer to appendix page 64 and column 1 beginning at line 63 through column 2, line 2, here's what the specification acknowledged. And I will paraphrase some, but the Court apparently has found my reference. The asserted patent specification acknowledged the concept of targeting promotional content and advertising. For example, a sponsored link, a banner, or an embedded coupon, Judge Chen, in your hypothetical, for example, to a particular user group on a social media network using a geolocalized client terminal, and that it was well known at the time of the claimed invention. And so, for example, Your Honor, I think, frankly, that portion of the specification is the patentee's admission that the hypothetical you provided at the beginning of the argument would not only be ineligible, but would be known to the art before the invention date. So as the patent claims, that technology was well known, and so that cannot be the improvement over the state of the art, or cannot be the inventive concept under Step 2 of Alice to save these claims once they are deemed to be abstract.
A question about the amendment. You point out that in the originating court, I think the Northern District of Illinois, the judge had a standing order by which the plaintiff had an opportunity to either amend or defend on the merits against your motion to dismiss. And evidently they did not seek to amend at that time. I've got that right?
Yes, Your Honor. I'm seeing I'm out of time, but can I answer your question, Your Honor?
Yes, once I get to it, if I may.
Apologies.
So the question is, ultimately Judge Wu did not deny the motion for reconsideration on those grounds. I think he did it on futility. Is this additional argument that you've made about why amendment should not be permitted, is that one we can consider on our standard of review since the district court did not reach that argument?
Your Honor, it would be an alternative grounds for affirmance, and the reason is futility is one basis that a court may deny an amendment, which Judge Wu expressly found twice in the original order and then the motion for reconsideration, the futility of the amendments, but so is untimeliness. And as Your Honor has pointed out, the Northern District of Illinois standing order, and I'll briefly read the order to the record, and then unless there are further questions, I'll take my seat. It states this, if the parties litigate the motion to dismiss and the moving party prevails, then the non-moving party is advised that this court may dismiss the case with prejudice under the appropriate legal standards. So the Northern District of Illinois local rule or standing rule essentially puts the...
But was Judge Wu operating under that rule?
Judge Chen, so the motion to dismiss was filed in Illinois. It was fully briefed, and while it was briefed, Judge Blakely in the Northern District of Illinois granted a 1404A motion to Judge Wu. Judge Wu did not, to be clear, Judge Chen, Judge Wu did not expressly use that provision as a basis for denying amendment. He ruled on the futility of the amendment when they finally, after the motion to dismiss, was granted in the motion for reconsideration.
Right, I'm just trying to figure out whether it's a legitimate alternative basis to deny the motion to amend based on this rule that's in a different court.
Well, because the rule was pending when the papers were filed, the procedural step of making the decision, am I going to go ahead and file a new complaint and amend it under the Northern District rules of Illinois, or am I going to stand on my complaint because I feel confident...
So when the case got transferred to California, the operation of that rule already kicked in and carried over with the case?
We believe so, Your Honor.
Okay.
Was there any comparable rule in CDCAL?
Not that I'm aware of, Judge Cunningham.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Ms. Weitzman will have 4 minutes.
Thank you for the additional time, Your Honor. Let me start with the last point. I think it's the easiest one to address with respect to the timeliness of the proposed amendment. The district court did not rule on the basis. It did not find that the proposed amendment was untimely, and the court should not find a waiver where the court did not find one. With respect to whether the court's standing orders were transferred, no, they were not. The court was very specific about what procedural rules would follow the case from Illinois to California. And this is in Appendix 40 and Docket Entry 91. It said that the court's local rules of the Northern District of Illinois would continue to apply through claim construction. It said nothing about adopting a standing order of a particular judge who said only that if I grant a motion to dismiss, I will only allow leave under the appropriate legal standards. What are those legal standards in the Ninth Circuit? Extreme liberality. There is a presumption in favor of amendment, absent prejudice. SNAP never showed any prejudice.
So when it says in the document that the court will continue to use the local rules for the Northern District of Illinois until the claim construction slash Markman hearing?
Correct.
Wouldn't this period of time dealing with this motion to dismiss be encompassed within that statement?
SNAP is not relying on any local rule of the Northern District of Illinois. It's relying on an individual judge's standing order that says, I'm going to decide whether to grant leave under the appropriate legal standards. The appropriate legal standards are, in the Ninth Circuit, that absent a showing of prejudice, there is a presumption that amendment should be granted. It's an extreme liberality standard in the Ninth Circuit. SNAP never even asked for dismissal with prejudice until the hearing. It never put us on notice that it was seeking dismissal with prejudice. And the courts routinely, for example, in Atrix, they were allowed to amend before they proposed a second amended complaint, which was then considered.
If you were to prevail on your 101 appeal and we were to send the case back to the district court, couldn't it and shouldn't it be up to that judge first to decide the impact of the Northern District of Illinois rules and the standing order of the judge? That is, wouldn't SNAP be free to make this argument that you lose anyway?
Well, I don't think it made the argument in connection with the motion to dismiss. I believe that the court should find that the claim limitation satisfies step one, but I want to get to the point of step two before my time runs out. We have to remember the context of this. This is a motion to dismiss at the pleading stage. And all presumptions, there's a presumption of validity, and there's also a presumption that all the allegations in the complaint as pled are true. And the burden was on SNAP to show that the intrinsic record contained a clear statement that the invention was well understood, routine, or conventional. That was SNAP's burden. Double burden, as the moving party and as the party bearing the burden of proof under a clear and convincing evidence. There is no clear statement anywhere in this record that the claimed steps, as opposed to computer parts, were well-known, routine, and conventional at the time of the invention. And if I could point the court to two pieces of the appendix to review before reaching its decision, that would be the statements that SNAP made to the PTO itself at Appendix 961, and the prior art, which Mr. Salem submitted with his declaration to show what was conventional at the time, or what was prior art at the time, and that would be at Appendix 216, Figure 5. The one prior art patent that it provided to show what was conventional actually shows the flaws in the conventional technology that Sanderling's invention tried to improve on. I see I'm out of time.
Okay, thanks very much. The case is submitted.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Your Honor.